Hello and welcome to Sense in Numbers, a podcast created and hosted by two people who have varying levels of experience in mental health issues. We are not mental health professionals, we just want to create a format for people to listen, share and find support in. Each episode will concentrate on different aspects of mental health illness, treatment and experience.
We also feel it pertinent to deliver a trigger warning due to the subject matter of the podcast. You may hear some distressing details and stories. There will also be some mature language and possibly my squeaky crying voice, so listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Sense in Numbers podcast. My name is Ben.
And I'm Gemma.
Welcome back. I know it's been a while.
How long do we even know?
We definitely released something this year.
Are we sure?
Yeah, because last time we spoke to Jamie, didn't we? So it's definitely this year.
Oh, and we did anniversary of the whole point of doing it, and that was May time or just after. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we might have done two.
It's hard to say. Yeah. I like the fact that there's no rhyme or reason to our release pattern. We just do what we want when we want.
Sporadic, a little bit like your mental health.
It's intentional, obviously. So how have you been, Gem?
Well, okay, really. Still struggling with not having had a holiday in a year and a half. Pain levels been quite high, but hopefully booking something, maybe even when we finish recording this.
We'll get a holiday. I know how important it is to you and your mental health for you to be... Oh, sorry, I just threw up my mouth a little bit. I know how important it is for you.
Is it the thought of going somewhere that's hot as balls when you...
This is, for me, this is a traditional trade-off in the relationship because you, not only do you enjoy holidays, and you do.
And I do. I think you enjoy holidays, though. You just don't like sitting in ball soup.
Yeah, yeah. And I, everywhere you want to go is Mars, and everywhere I want to go is Pluto. And it's such a trade-off, isn't it? I don't mind, though. Whatever keeps you happy and functional, I suppose.
Yeah, more emphasis on the functional, I think.
Yeah. It feels good to be back. I do miss it. And there's a few people who are like, when are you recording a new episode? Just, you know, spare time and all that. It's not like you can just pop one out every week.
You have more opportunity. We've mentioned it before, but I work away. So, you know, if I'm not here, then we just can't.
And you don't want a mental health podcast with just me because that would be one hell of a ride. We've got the normal stuff today, haven't we? We've got that's not true, mate. And we've also got...
Preposterous past procedures.
Yeah, we have. And the meat of the episode today, we are going to discuss general attitude and approach towards sports personalities, predominantly women, and how they are treated if they openly discuss their mental health or mental health problems that they might be having and how people react to that. Should we get stuck in?
And how have you been, my lovely Bermuda Triangle?
I've not been too bad. I'm struggling a little bit at night. You know, we've been together a while now, and when we first got together, I had no trouble sleeping because the noises weren't that loud. Sorry, the voices weren't that loud. But now it appears that I am struggling to sleep, and when I do find these small baskets of snooze, they're normally peppered with really, really like miserable dreams, like very, what's the word, mundane dreams. Mm. And I know, like in your dreams, I don't know about you. Well, you probably don't. Do androids dream?
Not a lot.
No. Yeah, but you do dream, don't you? But yours are always just you shouting at people.
No, I definitely do dream. I don't remember a lot of them because I have to be medicated to get to sleep. So I think I'm just that little bit more spaced out and don't remember a lot of them. When I'm struggling to sleep, then I seem to get trapped in that, you know, realm in between actually being asleep. So my brain thinks that I am, but my body knows that I'm not. And then I have sleep paralysis and night terrors, I suppose you call it. I told you recently I was down on base, and was it just after I had my jab? I think it was just after I had my first COVID jab. And I knew I wasn't going to sleep very well, but I was in so much pain. And so my medication didn't work as well as it normally would. And I had a dream just as I was dozing off that somebody was in my room and grabbed both of my ankles and tried to just yank me off the bed. And it was so real, and I could feel the hands on my ankles. It was absolutely terrifying, and then my heart was pounding, and I'm sitting up and I'm wide awake, and it takes me forever to try and get back to sleep again. And I know that when I do, it's probably going to happen again. So it's like really exhausting, but not the way that you're, like, you're struggling to get to sleep, aren't you? Yeah.
In relation to that, we've had conversations with other people, haven't we, that have either been heavily medicated or taken certain medication, and they've had sleep paralysis and night terrors. It just sounds horrid. What I'm about to moan about isn't even remotely as bad as that. So in one way, I'm grateful.
And it's almost always when I'm on my own.
Yeah.
And I hate that because, you know, you just want someone to kind of bring you back to reality and go, no, it's fine, there's nobody in here. But when I'm on my own and I'm away from home and something like that happens, it's really, really horrible.
And then you struggle to get back to sleep.
Exactly.
Because you're worried about it happening again.
And that's with the terrors, if you will. With the sleep paralysis, I hate that, because if it happens once in a night, it will probably happen 6 or 7 times to me, and it's every time I try and fall asleep. And I just spend the whole night trying to force myself to wake up from this horrible experience, heart pounding, sweating, and then having to lie down and try and get back to sleep again. And then facing in the morning that kind of pickle of, do I just call in sick and say, look, I have not slept at all and I'm going to be baggage, or, you know, I'm not actually ill right now, I just didn't sleep at all, but then that makes my pain worse and it has the knock on. So it's a really I hate taking days off because of my fibromyalgia. I've only taken one, haven't I?
Well, I was just about to say, for you to take time off, it would be quite significant for you, because I don't know, you'd like to use the phrase, but you just ramble on, don't you? Not ramble on.
All right. Soldier on, or one of those kind of phrases, I think you mean. But
your approach is, if you take one day off because of it, it'll become a succession of days.
Yeah.
So the sleep, but it's strange, because it's almost like your mind is sabotaging you, and it's, especially when it comes to sleep, and obviously the amount of driving you do. That's not cool.
No.
I'd much rather have what I'm about to moan about.
I was just going to say, sorry, we've just gone way off on a tangent and talking about me again. Please,
no, it's fine.
Continue.
It's a podcast of two people.
You mean two listeners.
Yeah, so my issue, and it's been going on for a while, when I do eventually sleep, I have these dreams and they're so mundane. And for me, I've always dreamt of sunbeams and hope. Those are two prostitute names. Sex worker names. I used to have really vivid, interesting dreams, because I am quite an imaginative person, as you well know. And as of late, they're just dreams of failure, like personal failure and sexual failure, and even like do mundane things. Like I had a dream the Tuesday before the last day of term, where I was in a supermarket and the cashier was shouting at me because I'd got my gym membership out to pay for something, and she just started shouting at me, and then everyone else started chiming in about stuff that had nothing to do with being in the supermarket. I had my bank card out, like, oh, your shoes are cheap, you tell you can shop at Jack and Mo. And I'm like, I thought sleep was supposed to be an escape from reality.
No, I don't think that's correct, but that's not mundane, that's fucking mad. What you're on about, that a load of people start shouting at you about clothes in
18 months ago, that dream, then one of my arms would have turned into like a katana, and I would have just started slicing scalps off people. But this dream, well, my dreams of late, just me being like a sad sack.
So the stuff that's going on around you is just as bizarre as always, but you're just not really reacting.
No, it's just mundane, boring situation. And I wake up and I'm like, ugh, I don't know why. I don't know why I've been dreaming of failure of late and just boring stuff. But yeah, but you did help when you came back the other day, and I didn't have the American Office on. I didn't touch my phone. I read and then put my eye mask on like a champion and slept for at least 45, 50 minutes. I had a good night's sleep. So yeah, apart from that, I've just been tip top. Right, it is now time for Preposterous Past Procedures. This episode, Jem's going to provide us with a fantastic example of PPP. Take it away.
Yeah, I think it is a good one. There were a couple of chaps, both Americans, and they lived a little bit apart. One was born in 1897, the other in 1932, but they had almost identical beliefs, really, in what it was that caused schizophrenia.
Ooh.
What they thought was causing it was chronic intoxication caused by some mind-altering substance or toxin produced inside the sufferer's own body.
No, I'm listening.
So these two dudes, one was called Bayard Holmes and the other one Henry Cotton, and they both developed ways of essentially doing either surgical excisions on either organs or glands or whatever, or tooth extraction to try and combat schizophrenia, because they thought it was either bacteria or some kind of toxin that was being produced within the person's own body that was making them unwell. Holmes had no particular interest in psychiatry until 1905, when his own son was developed, they used to call it dementia praecox, don't know, his own son developed schizophrenia. He was understandably devastated. All of this information is coming from discovermagazine.com, by the way. Okay. And devoted the rest of his life to researching the disease. He didn't train as a psychiatrist, but in 1916, he announced that he'd found the cause of schizophrenia, or the name that it was known by before, which I'm not going to attempt to pronounce.
Body madness.
Yeah. He devised a surgical treatment for the disorder, which was making an opening into the intestine to allow it to be irrigated daily.
Does that mean cleaned out?
Yeah, washed out, to clear the bacteria and the toxin. Determined to help his son, who was called Ralph, he operated on him, but he died 4 days later from complications of the surgery. Despite this, he persisted with his surgical cure, in inverted commas. Henry Cotton was, as I said, born a little bit later, and he was a qualified doctor and then returned to the US after training in Germany to become the director of an asylum, the Trenton State Hospital in New Jersey. And he was also a believer in bacterial auto-intoxication, or focal sepsis, as it was also known. As the basis of psychiatric illness and also a surgery for a treatment of schizophrenia. But he was a little bit more obsessed with ripping teeth out. Holmes focused on the intestines, and he thought that, you know, that this gut bacteria that was the problem. Cotton removed teeth, tonsils, gallbladders, cervices — I've never seen cervix in the plural before — colons, thyroids, and other body parts.
So what are you left with?
Well, no, I mean, I don't think he took all of those things out of each person. Oh. I think you
it'd just be a just skin sleeping bag, wouldn't you? Christ.
Just a shell. So, yeah, I think it was bits from different people. I might be wrong.
I need you to find out, because that would be amazing.
He performed 645 colectomies. So I'm presuming that's like removing the...
Dude, if you don't know.
Colon, yeah. Colectomies.
You can still poop, can't you, if you don't have a colon?
I don't have time to get into this right now.
Okay.
With approximately 33% being for schizophrenia, manic depressive and mild disorders. So maybe you just need your colon ripped out.
And my teeth. And my gallbladder.
He claimed astonishingly high success rates of over 80%, but also acknowledged... This doesn't make sense. The most basic maths. I'm no mathematician, but something doesn't add up here. So he claimed astonishingly high success rates of over 80%, but also acknowledged a mortality rate of 25 to 30%. What? He wasn't mad, but then he died. He explained the high mortality rate as the poor physical condition of the patients with chronic psychosis. Could you take half their fucking organs out?
So that Anchorman quote, 60% of the time, it worked every time.
He was a controversial figure, probably not surprisingly, and he lost his post as clinical director of the asylum, but was allowed to remain as the director of research and continued performing surgeries and teeth extractions at his private clinic. This bit. So keen was Cotton on pulling teeth that he had all of his own wife and son's teeth removed as a precaution. Sadly, both of his two sons died by suicide. Imagine your own dad rips all your teeth out because he thinks you're going to suffer from a mental disorder.
I was going to ask, did he pull his own teeth out?
It doesn't say.
Because that's the whole thing's dark anyway. That's some sadistic shit. Pulling all of your family's teeth out to stop them developing mental health
issues. Maybe he's like being a martyr. Don't worry about me.
I'm strong.
All right, gummy. So yeah, I was a little bit surprised I hadn't seen this one before.
Yeah.
I just stumbled across it.
That's a really good one.
Today, actually. It's absolutely fucking bizarre.
I have a few questions. The first question would be, during these practices that we've discussed over the episodes, they always seem to like be fascinated by one particular part of the body, and they concentrate on it, assuming that will eradicate any issues that the victim's suffering from.
See, with
teeth, a really odd one.
With, what was his name, Bayard Holmes, with him, his own son became unwell, and then he was desperate, you know, he wanted to figure something out, and I think maybe he had IBS or something, and you know, those kinds of things, but that wouldn't have been a term back then. And so he thought, oh, there's something going on in his intestines, in his gut, that's where I should focus. The dude ripping out people's teeth just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, unless he knew one person with schizophrenia and they also happened to have bad teeth. I just, and like, how's your gallbladder? I don't know. What are you on about? Whip it all out.
Yeah, I think you need to find out whether there were people just walking around with none of that business on them.
See who he's like the game operation. Yeah, how many people, who was the champion of organ/teeth removal. I've got nothing left.
It's such a bizarre.
The only thing I've got left is my fucking brain, which is the thing that's actually got the problem. Yeah.
I've still got the schizophrenia. no one can take photos of me. I have to be trolleyed around everywhere in a wheelbarrow because he took my toes. What a pair of belters. That's quite sad as well, though. Both of his sons commit suicide.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it exclusively is, but like Munchausen thing, you know, when you...
Oh, yeah, potentially.
He could have driven them to that point. That could have been
that's
healthy.
Not Munchausen, though.
I know, that's convincing someone that they're ill and they're not. Is that correct?
Munchausen by proxy is where the parent or somebody, you know, essentially cops onto both the child and doctors and whatever, that there's something wrong with them, and they'll do things so that they present with either injuries or clinical signs that show there's something wrong with them. Munchausen, not by proxy, is when they do that themselves. So people who are constantly saying, right, I've got this, I've got that, you know, fabricating symptoms, all those sort of things. But Munchausen by proxy is really fucked up.
But then he clearly drove those two boys.
Potentially. I cannot fathom how ripping teeth out.
But also, on the positive side, it makes me so thankful that I live in the era that I do in regards to attitudes towards mental health and medication, because all I have to do is take, you know, a small tablet once a day. There are other things that I have to maintain, but back then it was just, let's just fling shit up the wall and see what sticks.
I mean, they kind of had to because they didn't know, and that's the idea, obviously, of research. But I just can't imagine two people being so hell-bent, and even in the face of it. There was another site, which it was medscape.com, and that one actually said that cotton was in fact obscuring mortality rates for some procedures of approximately 45%. You're killing nearly half your patients, and this is to prevent them developing schizophrenia or other mental health issues. Just what, they might not have even got them, and you're killing half of the people that are coming to see you.
Like after one or two, you'd be like, chap, knock it on the head, because it's not a good idea. After
he's like, I'll be with you in a minute, I'm just ripping my wife's teeth out.
Oh, I don't, yeah, that's really grim. And
you're welcome.
Preposterous.
It
you
is
always,
preposterous.
You always bring the grim ones, don't you? Thank you for that, Gemma. That was amazing. Well, it wasn't amazing, it was grim. Thank you.
You need to pipe down, I'm going to have all your teeth ripped out.
Good luck. Good luck with that, bab. Recently, there have been a few high-profile cases of certain people being vilified in the media for being quite honest and outspoken about their mental health. The most recent one being Simone Biles, who is an extraordinary young person. She's a gold medal-winning athlete. She's a wonderful person. She loads for the community of gymnastics, and she was quite prominent when, unfortunately, there was a lot of cases of sexually inappropriate behaviour towards young gymnasts. Sexual abuse victim. She's done an incredible amount. And what, is she 24?
Yeah.
She's just a fantastic human being. So what's happened then?
The Olympics, the 2020 Olympics going on right now. Obviously a year delayed in Tokyo, and it is fabulous. And I'm enjoying it. You know, I watch it all. And Simone Biles, as you say, amazing athlete. She's actually an American gymnast and was the defending Olympic champion in a couple of different disciplines, I think, in the all-around final and probably the floor and maybe the vault as well. She won a lot last time. It was quite clear, if you watch gymnastics, it was quite clear that she just was not on her A game. When as soon as she came out for qualifying, something wasn't quite right. You know, big steps on landings and things like that. It was in the team final. Yeah, it was in the team final. And she did a vault and landed quite funny and went and spoke to her coach and then left the arena for a short time, came back and announced to the rest of the team that she wasn't going to be carrying on because she needed to take care of her mental health and well-being. It shouldn't be surprising, but it still is to me. Mostly tubby, middle-aged losers who have never won anything in their lives and never set an example and never inspired anybody just go to town and say, you know, it's ridiculous. She should be able to deal with pressure and this and that. And to be honest, when she was winning before, you know, sort of six, even 8 years ago, maybe, I can't remember how old she was when she broke onto the scene. But that's when the sexual abuse by Dr. Nasser was taking place on the American gymnastics team. And she still managed to do that. Like, she can deal with pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And appropriately, all of the commentators have come out in support, many of them, almost all of them, in fact, athletes of some kind or ex-representatives in the chosen sport they're commentating on. Obviously, that's the point of it. And Alex Scott did a brilliant piece to camera almost immediately after she'd left the arena and said she wasn't going to be carrying on. Just backing her up and saying, you know, it's not just... Not that it would be a problem, but it's not just not doing your best and not wanting to take part. She's not like throwing a tantrum because she's not doing very well. The moves that these gymnasts do, they're like meters in the air, especially on things like vault. She could very, very seriously injure herself or worse if she gets it wrong. And when her head isn't in the right place for those kinds of activities, it is absolutely the right thing to do to step away. And she'll come back and she'll be at other events and she'll potentially even be at the next Olympics and she'll win even more medals. But who has the right to say she should be able to deal with this pressure? She's just throwing a tantrum. She's this and that. It's absolutely absurd. And this is why people don't come forward. I did, however, see a tweet by her earlier today, which said, you know, the outpouring of love and support has made her realise it really was the right thing to do and that it's okay. And I'm really glad for that. But there's also been a lot of trolling and just despicable behaviour from nobodies. And I can't... only a couple of months ago, I think it was Naomi Osaka pulled out of... was it Wimbledon?
French Open.
French Open, to protect her mental well-being. Ben Stokes was announced, I think, yesterday that he's taken, you know, an indefinite break from cricket for the same reasons. And I think both figuratively and obviously literally, we put athletes and sports people on a pedestal sometimes. Yeah. Well, they put themselves there because they're amazing and they achieve brilliant things. But I think too many of us forget that they're human beings. And a lot of the time, they're really quite young as well. You know, a 13-year-old girl won the skateboarding, you know, the first skateboarding gold. Imagine if she'd got some horrific injury that affected her. You know, she wasn't able to skateboard again. If she wasn't quite in the right mind space, it's really dangerous. And I don't know, I'm rambling, but
it's absolutely fine.
Proper pisses me off.
I think the one thing that what's really, really boiled my piss is that the same brigade, and I'm not mentioning, I don't want to grant any of these people any time, so we'll just, but we know who we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's these same brigade of mouth breathing non-event of humans that like rightly pointed out, haven't achieved anything. They're the ones that, like, when something does happen to somebody in the spotlight because of mental health, whether it be suicide or an attempt on their own life, like, oh, why didn't they speak out? Why haven't they mentioned it? It seems to me like, and there is a particular pattern, it is an almost misogyny in mental health awareness or appreciation, especially with celebrities or female athletes. There seems to be this kind of reluctance to treat them the same as you would men coming out and saying it.
I'm not sure, you know, because I can't think, apart from Ben Stokes, have there been any other high-profile male sports people or athletes that have done that, that have actually come out and said, this is the reason?
The cricketers, there have been quite a few. There was a quite an interesting documentary called The Edge, which is on Amazon Prime at the moment. And that documents one of the Ashes tours from a few years back when they were talking to Jonathan Trott and the likes of, and the way depression manifested because they spend 3 to 4 months away from their families. And that was an insight into why it can happen or how it develops. But I just feel like that if an athlete wants to take time out of the spotlight because their mind isn't right, regardless of whether they say it's mental health or whatever, it's absolutely their choice. But it just seems to me when it's women and mental health mentioned, there's just certain language.
It's the implication of weakness, yeah. And I cannot abide it. There are few people that I've been aware of in my entire life stronger than Simone Biles.
Yeah.
Physically and mentally, I just can't believe what she's come through, and she's helped others through, and she's been spokesperson. She didn't have to take that on. She could have been a gymnast and been wonderful and just stayed in the background and not dealt with all the other issues. It's genuinely despicable that people are calling her out for taking care of herself. It's ridiculous. And I know that a lot of, again, the commentators on the Olympics, ex-gymnasts like Beth Tweddle and people like that, have been saying, they refer to it as the twisties, I think they said. And you just get a little bit off kilter or out of sync with when you're in the air and you're spinning, twisting, obviously, you'll mistime things, and that's when you can get really horrific injuries.
Yeah.
It's just that nobody's ever spoken about it before, I think. And so again, she's being absolutely incredible, being a role model, letting people know that it is okay. And I'm glad that she has focused on the positive comments and not all the nasty bile-ridden comments.
And on that note, for the most part, the response was incredibly supportive, and it was so nice to see people speak up in her defence. Also, there were quite a few people, you know, being honest about their own mental health. And it is a very, very, very small percentage of wankers who have used the...
Don't use the word wanker enough. That's great.
Yes.
Sorry. Just a little cuss word appreciation moment.
A small percentage of wankers who've taken the opportunity to take a shot at somebody who's had more success in the first quarter of their life than 10 of these gimps will ever have.
It's pathetic, isn't it?
It's just... And it's such a waste of energy. I just noticed it recently, and that the Osaka one was quite interesting as well. She was referred to as petulant, thrown a tantrum. Mm-hmm. Now, I read this morning that Djokovic proper had a paddy, smashed rackets, stormed off, refused to come back onto court, but it's not been dealt with in the same way.
No, it won't be, and he won't be referred to as things like hysterical, which spoke about in a previous episode. However, it is important to remember that he also right now might be struggling with his mental health.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you get people like John McEnroe, and that was his trademark, that's how he used to behave. But it's unusual for Djokovic, but then it's also unusual for Djokovic to lose. But then that's what some people are saying about Simone Biles, really. She wasn't doing that well for once, and she can't deal with it, and she's gone off. But I truly don't think that's the case. I think that she wasn't doing that well because she had this stuff going on, and she needed to go and take care of herself. And it was the right thing to do. But it's an interesting phenomenon that not only will people attack somebody publicly or, you know, on Twitter or whatever, saying that they're weak and pathetic because they're taking care of themselves.
If when you do have mental health issues, so the only one I can obviously talk about is depression. When bouts of depression, brushing my teeth is a victory.
Yeah.
Getting dressed is a victory. Thankfully, I can say it hasn't happened with any frequency when I've been at school, because that's my place where I don't have time to think about it. But when it does occur, there are so many things that I struggle to do, because it attacks you, it attacks who you are, and it makes you doubt the things that you know to be true. Now, if you couple that with the intense scrutiny of being an athlete, a young black athlete who has been quite prominent since, I think she was 14, wasn't she, when she came on the scene?
I don't know, that sounds like a bit of a stretch, because that would be 10 years, and I don't think she's been... She's probably on people's radar in the gymnastics world at that point, definitely. But
not maintaining her mental health or ignoring it would be more devastating to her and quite possibly her teammates or anything like that. So it has to be put first, and the things that she does, the level of physicality.
Do you know what I find extra fascinating? That Dina Asher-Smith didn't qualify for the 100 metres final when she definitely on recent form would have been our favourite. She didn't qualify because she tore her hamstring at a meet. I think it was the start of July. It really wasn't very long ago. And initially, they said, you're not going to get to the Olympics. It's not going to happen. They managed to work magic almost and get her there and to be able to run. And yeah, she wasn't quite herself, but then neither was Simone Biles. But because she said, oh yeah, I tore my hamstring a month ago, that's fine. Like the difference in how you're treated if you have a physical injury.
Because people
injury.
Can't see that kind As of a, thing.
We can't see her fucking hamstring.
I know, but it's easier to picture for them.
But what do we think the reaction might have been if she'd said, you know, my head's just not in the game right now, I need to take some time out for my mental well-being. I'll tell you two things. One of them would have been very similar, that, you know, you're weak and you should be used to the pressure and blah, 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 blah. The other one would be, oh, jumping on the bandwagon, not doing very well. Yeah. So now a few people have done it. But actually, this must be so common, and there must be... I read earlier that Simone Biles, I think it was actually... She didn't just go to the Worlds. I think she won world titles when she had broken toes in both feet. Fucking weak. Bitch, please.
Whenever a weakness is mentioned to me or I read it, I always immediately, and I don't know why, it's something that I have to break the habit of, I immediately think physicality.
Yeah.
You know, physical presence. And now, you know, I've got zero interest in the Olympics, but watching watching these athletes do what they do, especially to the standard that she's capable of, just, it makes me feel ashamed that I am 14 years older than her. I get out of breath switching this laptop on, and the level she's achieved, and someone has the gall, someone has the conkers to turn around and call her weak, and it boggles my mind. But thankfully, it is a very small percentage of dildos that are saying it. But I have loved the response. You, like you pointed out at the start, it's the exact reason why people do not say anything. And I know loads of people who won't mention it to their work colleagues. I'm not saying go and tell everyone your deepest, darkest problems. But whenever it's mentioned, there's the reason why certain people react the way they do, because it's still not a comfortable thing for people to hear.
Absolutely. And, you know, all ties in quite nicely that one of the main reasons we do this, because we want to reduce the stigma around
keep the conversation
mental
going.
Illness or just being mentally unwell. And Simone Biles is an absolute legend. Naomi Osaka is an absolute legend. Ben Stokes, all right, he's had a bit of a checkered past, but he's pretty much a legend. And everyone else can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Strongly agree.
I think I might have said somebody should go fuck themselves in every episode.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine. That's fine. Well, once we get more than a couple of listeners, we'll get them to do the hard work and they can find out what the tally is. Esto no es cierto, amigo. What's that?
That's not true, mate, in Spanish, I presume.
Is it racist what I just did?
No, you just said something in Spanish. But I mean, the accent was a little bit...
Am I Bernard... I was going to say Bernard Matthews.
Manning.
Am I Bernard Matthews? I wish I was Bernard Matthews.
Why?
Like turkey drumsticks and stuff like that he does.
Turkey is the worst meat.
Yeah, so this episode's That Is Not True Friend is... this episode's That's Not True Friend is the belief that therapy and self-help are just a waste of time and you can just take a pill instead. Now, having experienced therapy, I don't know why I said it like four, but having experienced therapy, I have had experience in therapy and I found it incredibly helpful until she dumped me. Remember, she chimed me off, didn't she?
Yeah.
It was expensive, but very, very helpful, because I know that I can talk to you and do talk to you about anything, but the freedom of talking to somebody who doesn't know me, therefore has no preconceived ideas or bias or anything like that. But it was really helpful. Yeah, and then she chewed me off, which I don't think you would like to do as a therapist, because it's hurtful. But yeah, it really helped me. And I don't like the idea that there seems to be, I know that we're all about the stigmas on this podcast, but there seems to be a stigma related to therapy, like it's some new age hippie thing. And it's the process of just talking to someone and being listened to.
It is, but obviously they're also trained.
I think that people's attitude towards therapy is probably similar to people's attitude towards having your teeth removed when you're suffering from schizophrenia.
Or not, as a preventative measure.
But do you get what I'm trying to say? That people don't view it as a viable support
Absolutely.
System.
I think people are really reluctant to go to therapy or to even consider that it can be helpful. But then we started off our first episode talking about how reluctant most people are to take medication because they think that it alters them. Yeah, and so there's a bit of a no man's land in between I don't want something that's going to make me feel like a zombie and not feel my emotions, which isn't what medication does when you get it right, which we spoke about in the first episode, or rather you did, because I don't have that experience. And therapy not really doing anything and just throwing money at someone. But anyone I've spoken to who's had therapy rave about it, that it's absolutely brilliant.
My mother attended therapy sessions after our granddad died. And it was a huge loss. Obviously, it was a huge loss for her, but it was also the first close family member that she'd lost. And
it was sudden as well.
It was very sudden. And I remember her being very reluctant, because I wouldn't say she's old-fashioned in the way that she behaves or attitudes, but she's just part of a generation that has a very wary approach to stuff like that, about talking, etc. And she said it was the best thing that she'd ever did, because it opened up so many emotions that she'd repressed and got to the genesis of so many other things. It helped to deal with grief a lot better. Now, it doesn't work for everyone, just like anything, but you approach it with an open mind. You have to approach it with the confidence that you're going to be asked things that you can't prepare. It's a self-help. What would you put under the banner of that? We're talking about reading books or going for walks or...
Yeah, meditation.
Yeah.
Even changing your diet, honestly. Yeah. Like, people don't think about how... And obviously in diet, it does include things like alcohol. And for some people, just limiting that can have such a positive impact on their mental well-being, not necessarily their mental health. You know, it's not that they even have an issue in that area, but they will just feel lighter, like maybe...
Less burdened.
Exactly that.
And anyway, self-help in any regards, whether you're suffering from mental health issues or not, self-help's fantastic. Anything that can help you feel happier, lighter, more well-adjusted, you shouldn't be sniffed at.
Absolutely.
But I do know that there is an attitude, and without making too much of a generalisation, it seems to be a generational thing. Children and young adults now are so more receptive to the idea of talking to somebody, whereas...
But then I don't think, sorry to interrupt, but I don't think that... Very often it has that label of therapy. It's just talking, because that's all it is in reality. Yes, okay, they've got some serious qualifications and they are going to ask you specific things to get to the bottom of why you feel the way that you do and what they might be able to do to help, or what you could do to help yourself. But it's the label, I think.
Yeah, and the connotations attached to therapy.
Yeah.
Because when you say therapy to a certain group of people, they have this idea that you're going to be lying down on a red leather couch and someone's going to be probing your inner thoughts with really intrusive questions. But it's not like that at all. Like you've just pointed out, it's talking and being listened to.
That element of being listened to by somebody impartial is the key, because I try really hard. I've had training in a few areas that when people I know are struggling, or whether I know them or not really, but usually at the very least, if I'm put in touch with somebody to assist with struggles with mental health, then I'll at least know them via somebody else. It's rare that it will just be a random kind of referral, is not the right word, because I'm obviously not a professional in any way. I'm not trained to not react and to not, you know, if somebody says something like, oh, I'm worthless and I'm nothing, I just want to make that, you know, no, you're not, you're this, you're that, you've achieved so many things. But sometimes they just need you to shut the fuck up and listen.
Yeah.
And it's much better if the person has absolutely no personal connection to you whatsoever and is trained to do that, I think, than talking to anybody that you know. And I'm not discouraging talking to people that you know, but you're not going to get the same kind of service.
You're spot on. One of the hardest things to do, if you know the person who's hurting and struggling, the hardest thing to do is to listen without reaction or listen without bias. It's tough. And like you said, just to reiterate, please make sure you're talking to people, but it's a different level of conversation with the therapist. Like you say, there's no reaction, there's no judgment. And I think the only time I felt a little bit strange was when she asked me to...
Stop.
What?
Are you going to say something ridiculous?
No, I'm not. The only, I can't believe that it's a really serious thing. And you like, you have to, oh no, what's
that? That sounded like a classic setup for you saying, oh, and she asked me to film in a soft one. And then I don't know why she never called again.
No. The only time, I can't hold her. The only time I found it really strange and difficult was when she asked me to find a happy place. So she's like, where do you
find
feel...
her happy place?
No, okay, no. I'll just deal with her now.
Think of a place that you're really happy and content and safe. And that's not easy for me. She was like, where's what? Think of one. I was like, all right, chill out. I'm thinking. And I couldn't think of anywhere. So the first thing I thought of was KFC. This is terrible. So she's sitting there, oh, yeah, happy place. Don't tell me what it is because I need to know. And I'm like, good job. To think about what you can, you know, what you can smell. And I'm like,
chicken.
And then she's like, oh, what can you hear? And I'm like, orders being. I wasn't saying this, but in my head I was like, I can hear orders being called out. I can hear my tummy grumbling. And then she's like, I want you to go to that happy place whenever you're feeling slightly overwhelmed. And I'm like, I do go to that.
Isn't that a little bit adorable though, that you said you've been struggling with your sleep and I knew that you were feeling a little bit down when I was coming back home at the end of last week and I phoned you and said, would you like me to go buy a KFC? And I didn't know that you'd had that conversation. I didn't know that you said that.
No, that's the first time I've told anyone that. Happy
apart from her, obviously. Oh no, she didn't even want you to tell her.
Because she didn't want to know, just in case it was
awful. I know, so I brought you.
But that's your... not gift, that's just what you're very, very good at. Even when there are times when we may have rubbed each other the wrong way or just gotten each other's nerves, very few people understand me the way you do. Very few people can see the signs, the tells, that kind of thing. And I'm really, really embarrassed that I admitted to that as well. I could have just a leafy, wooded area or even at home with you and the dogs, but yeah.
At home with me and the dogs and a KFC.
Yeah, and a 16-piece bucket. But yeah, all joking aside, it is expensive, and unfortunately the burden on our NHS and our mental health support network is ever increasing, and the funding is getting less. But it doesn't have to be therapy. There are other things you can look at. And one of those things is just building a support system. If this is all you have, then that's absolutely fine. But there's parents and family members that you can go to, but there are also other adults that you can talk to, such as teachers. Teachers is an important one. I'm not just saying that because I'm a teacher, but a lot of people think that we are too stressed and too busy to hear about that stuff. No, that stuff's important because it builds a picture, and the more we know about the child, the more we can
so
help.
You're talking about children struggling now?
Yeah. Or you know, even if you're a parent
or colleagues
and you're on your own, colleagues, yeah, care providers, any trusted individual, peer group as well. So it could be anything that people that have common life experiences. Now, you know, I know there's things like survivor groups and stuff like that, but even if it is faith groups, activity groups.
Dancing for me, the dancing group that I was at.
That's a fantastic example, yeah. Yeah.
You know, I put little gifts together for the teacher and the girls that I danced with in High Wycombe. They had no idea. I might have already spoken about this on an earlier episode. So. I had started a course, again, away from home like they always are. 3 days after my mum's funeral, so the funeral's the Friday, and I moved there on the Sunday and started the course on the Monday.
Which, sorry to interrupt, is typical Gem.
Well, they gave me the option to not start the course at that point and potentially change it to a later one or not do it at all, but I just didn't want that, and it was absolutely without question the most difficult thing I've done in my entire life. I was a zombie for the vast majority of that course. I was lucky to have a few decent people in the hierarchy there who I'd have obviously ups and downs. I say obviously, but I did. And sometimes they could tell that I was just dipping again, and they'd call me into the office and say, you know, what's going on? I haven't seen you. Look like you haven't slept for 6 months for a while.
Yeah.
But the girls that I started doing dance classes, everybody used to go out drinking on a Thursday night, and I was around a load of new people, and it was obviously raw. So I didn't want to have a drink and get upset around a load of people I didn't know very well. It's naturally. Just not my style. So I thought I needed something to do. And I would have loved to have just been strong enough to say, look, I'm not going out getting pissed. I don't want to get upset, you know, and being upfront. But it was a real battle at the time, and so I started doing dance classes on a Thursday night that nobody could ask me to go out.
Yeah.
I very briefly mentioned to one of the girls, Melissa, who was wonderful, about when we were scattering my mum's ashes. So I'd already been there about 6 months at this point. I think it was like the next March we did that, and she was gobsmacked. She had no idea that any of it had been going on, but that's what it was, an escape, and it was something different, where I could just not think or talk about it for a couple of hours. And then when I left there and moved on, I put them all little gifts together, because they had absolutely no idea the difference they made in my life and just keeping me going from week to week. And it was completely unbeknownst to them. They had...
But that's, isn't that the beauty of that, though, that that group, that support group, had no idea they were a support group.
No.
And they were just welcoming and accommodating and
find
friendly.
A hobby, find a decent group of people.
And got you and... through the toughest period of your life. Yeah, mate.
It really was.
And I think that's the beauty of those kind of situations. Rugby helped me when we moved up here because I was a miserable arsehole and I didn't do anything. And doing stand-up for a bit was really helpful because that was a time in my life where I was in that ridiculous transitionary period where I was neither a teacher nor a borrower bee. and it really helped. And I think if you find a group, any group, as long as it's legal, don't go and join ISIS. Because that's not a support group. Well, I suppose to some, you know, there's an extremist who's struggling. just find a group, find a support group, and don't be afraid of therapy. It's really good, if you can afford it. It ain't cheap. Incense as well, there's a lot of incense. Well, I won't. But yeah, there you go. That's the this episode. Oh, it's not a true mate.
Sound.
There you have it. Episode 6. I really enjoyed that.
Did you?
For a podcast that's quite serious subject matter, it's very enjoyable. I mean, it doesn't hurt that I'm sat opposite you.
Ah, yeah, cutie patootie.
And this is probably the only room in the house that doesn't smell of dog farts.
Only because we shut them out.
Should we try and get another one out before the end of the year?
I don't think that would be too much of a struggle.
Nah, that'd be right. Hopefully we'll be able to book a holiday and that will make you feel a bit better.
Yeah.
Also, I'd like to give a quick shout out to a few people that I know that have either completed the mental health first aid course that we shared on Twitter. And there's also a few people that have taken on extra responsibilities in their workplace and they're now mental health advocates, mental health first aiders, and they're just kind of pushing it and spreading the word a bit. Appreciate that. Makes it all easier to keep the conversation going.
There's sense in numbers.
Sense in numbers, indeed. Look after each other and we'll see you in 7-8 months. Possibly, who knows?
Bye.